The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
This is Winners and Sinners, where we look back on the week that was, but of course with our usual few twists. We're delighted to be joined by Off the Ball's Cameron Hill and Saoirse Hanley, features writer with the Irish Independent. Cameron, let us know your winner of the week.
Yeah, I'm going with the Irish women's rugby team preemptively because they play on Sunday and I don't want to jinx a potential defeat to Scotland. I don't know. But it's a huge week for them. They're playing in the Aviva in the first ever standalone Irish women's rugby game. 30,000 tickets, I believe maybe even 35,000 tickets have been sold. Brilliant. For this game, meaning it's going to absolutely obliterate the previous attendance record.
I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I heard a report earlier on the news of 40,000. 40. So maybe it's continuing to climb. I will be there. I'm very excited.
Wow, it'll be 45 by the time we're finished here. We're doing our bit
well,
for the IRFU.
It would be great to see you sell it, wouldn't it?
Ah, it'd be incredible. But even 35,000 and 40,000 are like numbers kind of unheard of, considering Ireland played in the highest attendance for a Six Nations game at the start of the championship in Twickenham. 77,000 fans went in, which if you're not used to that level of a crowd can be intimidating. But this Irish team are incredible on a number of fronts. They performed so admirably at the World Cup and nearly got to a semi-final if it weren't for those pesky French. But when you hear the players
talking, surrender monkeys.
Absolutely.
Hate them.
Ireland were very unlucky in that game.
Incredibly unlucky. And they've been going from strength to strength and progressing in a huge way over the last couple of years. And Sunday, by all accounts, is going to be a celebration of that journey all the way back to 1993 when the first Irish women's team played actually against Scotland in Raeburn Place, where the first ever men's international took place back in 1871. So the team from that day in 93 are giving the jerseys on Saturday night to the current players.
Oh, wow.
In a kind of closing of the loop. And
that's
They'll have lovely stories. And just when you get to know that story and where they've all come from, and by the way, small plug, I've gone through the history of Irish women's rugby on Let Me Explain a couple of weeks ago. You can check it out wherever you get it in your podcast.
Yeah.
Just following that story and seeing the players knowing that and being so conscious of their history, it's quite amazing. And they get their victory lap on Sunday and they fully deserve it.
Yeah, brilliant.
I'm guessing back in that game in 1993, there was a lot less than 40,000 people in attendance.
Raeburn Place is a park in the middle of Edinburgh, so I don't know if they were able to bus in seats or anything at the time, but I'm not 100% sure that was.
12 people standing on the sidelines.
I think a lot of the people in the tiered seating, shall we say, were looking from their upstairs bedroom windows. But their story is fascinating. Tanya Waters, who I was speaking to a couple of weeks ago, who played in that game, organised the jerseys that day. Smithix jumped in and provided the jerseys for that game. And it struck me how interesting that novelty can be as a double-edged sword, because it would have been a great story. And when they initially came around, the Irish women's rugby team, a lot of people were jumping in and saying, this is great, yeah, I'll get on the bandwagon. But novelty can also be this probably won't be around forever, so I might as well enjoy it. But when this team starts to become a nuisance, maybe there'll be less sympathy for them. And there certainly has been in their 33-year history. They've had to put up with a lot.
Isn't it fair to say, and Saoirse, I'd love to know what you think as well, that the women's sport in general has started to be viewed differently than it used to be. It is still, I think, the Cinderella to men's sport. I think that's still fair to say. But, you know, camogie, women's football, women's rugby, women's hockey. People are watching the games. They appreciate that it's good sport and that they can back these teams and get behind them. And people are way more invested, I think, in women's sport than they used to be.
Definitely.
And I got into a lighthearted argument with someone recently, where we were talking about women's sport and how it's perceived. And like, I don't watch a huge amount of sport, but when I do, you know, I can kind of go all in. But we were talking about footballers and how much they earn, which is a big bugbear for me, but I will get into that another day. But we were talking about this, and the person I was talking to was like, oh, but like, do you think that, you know, do you think it's fair? Actually, sorry, I don't know why this came up. We were talking about controversial opinions that we had, and this person had said, like, oh, sometimes I wonder about, like, you know, women's sport and that people give out about them not being paid the same, but should they be if the attention isn't there? And I was like, okay, but the attention isn't there because we're not respecting it as big as men's sports, and then they're not getting paid as much, and then we end up in the same loop. And we were trying to kind of tease that out and be like, you know, I think all the footballers should get paid less, all these big guys, but I do think that it's fair to say that if you're not putting the same amount of money into your players and into the training and into the academies and into the marketing and into all of this, then you're not going to get the same output of interest.
They do still, you're not wrong, they do still treat men and women's sport differently. And I don't disagree with what you're saying, Saoirse. I do think that there's a change afoot. There's a change in the air. I like the fact that you are here going, the women's rugby. The fact that I'm going to the women's rugby.
Mm. Yeah.
All of that. And my daughter's coming too. And the funny thing is I said, oh, do you want to go to the women's rugby? She says, oh, well, I'm already kind of going. And I was like, oh, but she's like, if you're going to buy me a ticket, then that'll be totally fine. But she was going to go anyway. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's different.
And one of the things that's levelled at the men's rugby team often, as a stereotype that's, I think, sometimes slightly unfair, but exists for a reason, is the idea that that team isn't totally representative of the whole of Ireland. There's a lot of players from Leinster in that team. There's a lot of players that went to private schools. It's not quite representative of the whole. You get that far more in the women's team. So picking out just one random player, Linda Dugang, who plays tight head prop. She came to Ireland at age 9 from Cameroon. Her mother stayed behind. She came with her father and played rugby for the first time age 19 because she was going along to a tag rugby event that she was trying to get out of but couldn't at the last minute. And now she's got 50 caps for Ireland. That's insane.
I interviewed her before. Sorry, that's just come back to me. She was fantastic.
She's brilliant.
It's amazing hearing her talk about it. It's really, really good.
She's class. And there's so many other stories within that team of just incredible courage and coming back from long-term injuries and ACLs and various different setbacks. Brittany Hogan, one of the back row players, talked last year ahead of the World Cup about surviving sexual abuse and was so brave about that. And those stories, I think they're incredibly good at telling them, first off, because that's also crucial. But it creates more than just what's on the pitch, a narrative around the team and something you can actually identify with.
Well, hopefully they'll do the business. Hopefully they'll do the business at the weekend.
Come on, Ireland. Yeah, come on, absolutely. You girls in
come
green.
Come on, you girls in green. Sarah, give us your winner of the week.
My winner of the week is Virgin Island. So if anybody's been watching Virgin Island on Channel 4. Okay, I started watching it last night because curiosity got the better of me. And it's essentially a Channel 4, it's kind of classic Channel 4, but it's a reality, I suppose, series. And it's about 12 people who are virgins, who are feeling various amounts of shame or lack of confidence or embarrassment or any of these things. They get all the different stories on there. And they are brought to this island in Croatia where they'll work with a bunch of therapists and do a couple of workshops that are kind of hard to watch, and they will work through all of those things and I guess come out of it somewhat more prepared for what they might want to do afterwards.
Let me ask this possibly really stupid question. Is this about them all going on an island and losing their virginity?
It's possible.
Okay.
The first,
this
is what
I know. Say about this.
I know, and this is why I was wondering if it should be a winner or a sinner. It is my winner this week purely because I went into it thinking this is going to be awful. Like, this is really weird and it's really exploitative, and I don't know why they've made a TV show about this, and it's probably going to be handled really badly because how can you handle that in any way that's like, not, you know, that's not like that? It is so shockingly heartwarming and compelling to see a lot of these people who are of varying ages and sexualities and backgrounds, and they're kind of going into this feeling a certain way and having all of these different kinds of therapy sessions and other various things they're doing to kind of get more confident about this. And it's genuinely, I was crying watching an episode last night.
Really?
One of the first things they had to do was just talk about the things that they're ashamed of. Maybe it'd be things that they've been called in the past or ways that they view themselves, or, you know, all of it is kind of something that's holding them back from having that experience with someone else. And so they had to write all these things on t-shirts and talk to the group about it and then burn these t-shirts on the fire.
Forgive me, because I know you're saying it's heartwarming and I haven't seen it. It still sounds exploitative to me. Does it not? I'm not casting aspersions on anything you're saying, because I haven't seen the show. But like, even though it's done in a heartwarming way, I wonder, is that to protect Channel 4 as much as anything else? Because to me, it's like, you've already identified them as virgins and like there's something, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that does occur to me, I mean, maybe that was their choice. Is that necessary? I mean, it's not for everybody, obviously, but if that's their choice, do they need therapy about that choice?
Well, it's kind of, okay, I'll give you an example. One woman called Joy is...
I mean, there are some people for religious reasons, for example, who don't have sex before they're married. And that's a reasonable thing for somebody to decide if that's their belief.
Absolutely. And I think that's a crucial part of it, that because I was reading up on this earlier, because I was thinking, I was like, this is really odd that they've signed up to this. If they're people who are feeling, you know, embarrassed about having sex, but they're not embarrassed about doing any of this on TV, is kind of backwards and bonkers. But I was reading about some of the process that goes into like getting onto this, onto the show. And then a lot of the people that were on, say, season one have really good things to say about it, and having been very, you know, very well, I don't say well handled, but very well like taken care of while on the show and being able to kind of do that. But one, that's a good example, because one woman is called Joy, and she's rather young, like young to a point where you're like, I think you probably would have been fine without this. You could have given it a couple of years. But she was saying that she is from a very religious background. She grew up very Christian. She's feeling a lot of shame about like any of those desires that she has. It's not something that she was like, it's something that I want, but I just have so much holding me back from it. And that was one that made me cry, because she was talking about it last night in the episode I watched, and she came out of like a chat she had with one of the therapists and just had this huge breakthrough and this huge feeling of like acceptance and realizing what she does or doesn't want. And it was really lovely.
I do hear what you're saying though, Shane. It's like fix the virgin. It's something funny, isn't it? I'm actually not trying to be smart arse about it. It just feels,
I feel
this is making me uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable watching at times.
I think we're conditioned to look at reality TV like that, because so much of those shows in the past have been about, well, there's a win-lose scenario here. Either you lose the designated weight or you're the biggest, fattest loser. Like that was how it was for so, so long. And particularly shows around things like sex and your body and body acceptance, I always found incredibly squeamish. But I'd be willing to give this a try, because if... it sounds like there isn't a situation where the end goal is for you to have sex and that we'll
decide
that.
Then
you're fixed.
It's more so like, you know, what are the things that are, if it's an experience that you're looking for, what is it that's holding you back from that, and how can we help you break through that?
I think I might have to watch it now, and that's actually awful too. But I
that's what got me. I kept seeing things about it on social media, and a lot of people were saying, you know, it's the workshops are kind of hard to watch, and they are. I was cringing so much, because it's like anyone watching these, like they're sitting down and watching these, like, you know, workshops, and that would be uncomfortable for anybody, regardless of how experienced you are or aren't. And it is a little bit hard watching at times, but I do think there's a message in there that was really surprising, and I went into expecting to be like, I don't think I can watch this, but the more I let myself do it, I was like, this is actually quite lovely.
Alright, okay, we're just going to take a short break there. We'll be back after this with more Sinners.
Welcome back to Winners and Sinners with Off the Ball's Cameron Hill and Saoirse Handy, features writer with the Irish Independent. Cameron Hill, your Sinner of the Week.
My Sinner of the Week is Eurovision. So I'm going to shock everybody here. I know I exude an incredibly macho, masculine persona of like the Mailer Hemingway type, but for years I loved Eurovision. It was one of my favourite nights of the calendar year when... I was very young. The three things that would signal summer was here was the Champions League final, the European / Heineken / Investec Champions Cup final, and Eurovision. Those were the three tenets of this is it.
I guess,
we're nearly at the end
of
school.
Yeah.
And I went to Eurovision in 2022 Torino and absolutely loved it. It was an incredible time. Apparently you don't go to the grand final. It's a waste of time. Go to a pub to watch that, but get a show in at some point while you're there for the week. And just, it was an incredibly nice atmosphere and very generous. You didn't feel unsafe at any point during the time. And the city is just taken over by this incredible festival of kitsch and cringe and all that sort of thing.
Great, though.
The last couple of years, I've not watched it. And it's purely down to the fact that Israel are still competing in it. And I know there have been protests in Vienna already this week. And there will probably be some more ahead of the grand final tomorrow night. But I've just kind of found it intolerable and very, very difficult to square. And as a result, even if there's some sort of repercussion and Israel are kicked out of it eventually or however that goes,
you're done.
It kind of feels like it's ruined forever. You know, I don't think I would have the energy to go back and try and invest in it again. Yeah.
Well, then what I was going to ask you, I'm sure I already know the answer, because like only three countries aren't showing it. Like Netherlands, for example, I think Iceland are not sending somebody, but they're still showing it. Mm. Like, do you think that it's reasonable that we would still look at it here even? Because obviously you can look at it in other stations or whatever, but Do you know what I'm asking? You just think, no, it's dead to you.
Yeah, I think it's just so divorced from what I felt Eurovision was this incredibly accepting, fun space, a sort of break from everything that was going on in the world. And I know that's a dangerous territory, because anytime countries are going to be represented by someone at an international competition, politics is... there's a danger of it always becoming
politicized.
There's
a lot of countries that could be excluded on that basis.
Exactly.
Now, in fairness, Russia were excluded from the Eurovision. I don't know if you heard, but we had Graham Linehan on the show a little earlier in the week, because obviously they're playing the Father
My
Ted
Lovely
episode,
Horse.
My Lovely Horse episode. And he was outraged at this, and he said it's the wrong decision by RT. He said it was, and he said Ireland is the most anti-Semitic country.
Yeah, I suppose, I think if I was to choose any Father Ted episode, I probably wouldn't have picked that one, because it's sort of, you're saying the quiet part loud, but the fact that you're not showing it. I don't know, I find it very difficult to kind of attach myself to it again. I know my friends are the same, a few of my friends are the same, and will balk at the idea of trying to get back into something that would have really helped them identify as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. Or I've seen someone make the point this week that it was an incredibly important community for neurodiversity and acceptance of neurodiversity, the Eurovision Song Contest. And the level of just cringy outfits and costumes, and even when you're growing up,
it's always a great big hoot.
It's always a great night.
It's just a laugh. And seeing Graham Norton or Martin Whelan, depending on your preference, like rip the absolute piss out of it, was so enjoyable. But it's
all right.
Yeah, it's just been tainted for me.
What about you, Saoirse?
My sin of this week is a deep dish pizza. I was in Chicago
this
earlier
this week.
This
is the second mention we've had of deep dish pizza this week on the
show. How weird is that?
Well, Phil Davenport was in Chicago for his travel slot, and he raved about.
He loved it.
Yeah. Now, myself and Kira were both sceptical.
I used to work in the Chicago Pizza Pie Factory, where in Stephen's Green, which is now something else. And we served those deep dish pizzas. That's
too
what
much
we
dough.
Served.
There's
oh
too
my
much
God.
Of everything.
It's just bread.
There's too much dough, and there's too much cheese, and there's too much sauce, but then the crust is somehow like quiche-like. Mm. And I love sauce, I love cheese, love dough. I should love all of those things. I love pizza. It was so wrong.
It's like, you know those people that have all the characteristics of being attractive and somehow aren't.
You're sat across from them. It just doesn't.
That's disappointing.
And it's sad, because every other like hallmark Chicago food that I tried, I loved. And I never, ever, ever eat hot dogs. My friends always joke that like I'll sign up to anything. I'll sign up to any newsletter, you know, any kind of newsletter to get like a free pastry or whatever. I wouldn't even cross the road to get a free hot dog ever.
Seriously,
I hate them.
I would do anything for love, but I won't do that.
I won't do that. But I had a hot dog while I was there.
I had to drag Shane Coleman past hot dog vans in the States.
It was really lovely.
My college years were, it was
all hot
dog
all the time.
Coming home.
But I loved them. I had a hot dog in Chicago, and I was like, oh, this is actually really delicious. I really enjoyed the
and
beef
apparently,
sandwiches.
Fionn told us in Chicago, you do not ask for tomato ketchup on your hot dog. That is an insult to them.
The meat is too good.
I made a joke
about that. Even though they're fine with like weird radioactive green peppers and all sorts on top.
I like bread, and I also like cheese and all the other bits, but it's like, ugh, it's too heavy. It's wrong.
It's a casserole. It's a casserole.
It's kind of like a pizza quiche.
Not the only point of difference between you and Fionn Davenport. He's a Cubs fan. I know you're now a White Sox fan.
I'm now a proud White Sox fan, as of this week.
Look, that is our lot. Thank you so much to Cameron Hill. Thank you so much to Saoirse Hanley. Shane, that is our lot in general, though.
Yeah, have a great weekend. Up the bows tonight, and Tuara August Togabuge.
Yeah, come on, you girls in green. Have a fantastic weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4:00. On News Talk. Conversation that counts.